This is the Michael K. Show podcast.
I'm joyful and fun.
Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 2.
That's cool, man!
On 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
This is Stephen A. from Hollis, Queens, and the Michael K. Show starts now. Holla at your boy, Michael, Don Juan, and Peter.
And a good afternoon, everybody. This is indeed the Michael K. Show. We thank you for joining us on a steamy, hot Monday. It's June 28th. It's 2021, and we're thrilled to be with you. Looking forward to a big week. Lots to do. Michael K., Don LaGreca, Peter Rosenberg. We're apart, but we're together for the next 4.5 hours, together with you. The other 19 and a half, that is your responsibility. Hope everybody had a great weekend. Hope everybody had a better weekend than the Yankees did. Hope everybody's healthy, wealthy, and wise. Don, Peter, how you doing?
Fantastic. We're going through some issues with Yes because of it, but Yes was very nice to get me a director's chair when this whole thing started. Okay. And it's just been killing me. So Nancy got me this great chair. It's a little too high.
Right.
And now I adjusted the camera too much, so it's a little off. But
a little low, but you're good.
Very comfortable. Peter, you'll love this. Nancy also gets me a coffee machine.
Oh,
that I brought down to the man cave here. So I went out and got some cups and some stirs. And
so
I
got the Dunkin's done now.
So I've got my own little office here with the printer and the paper. I'm ready, baby.
I do have some news, Don. We're back in the studio tomorrow.
Yeah.
No, that's not true.
Yeah.
No, this is my little statement.
But I do find it, Michael, particularly funny that he's really settled in now to making this comfortable when you'd certainly have to say that we're at least closer to normalcy than ever before. And now
moves slowly, but when he moves with decisiveness.
I wasn't me moving. It was, Nancy with a couple of gifts for Father's Day.
So you had an uncomfortable chair this entire time?
Oh, it was awful.
Well, why didn't you just change it then?
Well, because you had to worry about, making sure that it was the right height and everything.
What a guy. You're the best. There's nobody better.
This is a great chair. Leather. Oh.
Now, Peter, you just took off Friday. We weren't told about it till about a minute before the show. So what were you doing on Friday?
By the way, I'm sorry about that. That's a miscommunication because it was known. I mean, do you guys really care? Let's be honest. You survived.
Well, we talked a lot of baseball, so we didn't notice whether you were there or not until hour five. Well,
survived,
well, no,
Peter.
ENN. Listen. When Andrew started doing ENN, we said,
wait, where's Peter?
Listen, we don't say these things in a vacuum. It's on the air. It's on television. It's on the radio. Sure. Terrific show Friday. I mean, we had an absolute ball.
Yep.
Yeah,
now,
I'm
not saying it had anything to do with you.
Wow.
No. I'm just saying that we just we got by. Oh, we got by.
Wow. Well, now you're making it somewhat hurtful. Also, I don't know why my picture is not on Yes.
Yeah, I don't either. I wasn't on at the beginning. It was just a Don show at the beginning, just as he dreams.
Don getting lower and lower. I'm not there at all.
It looks like you're in a ditch, Don. It really does. Put a little telephone book on.
No,
there.
Again, I was too high. I overcompensated with the camera. So
you'll
I just need to make the adjustment. But we'll do that during the break. Don't worry.
We'll figure it out.
All right, let's start off with the Yankees, and we start off with the Pinstripe Report brought to you by Truly Hard Seltzer. I as an aside, I love the mouth breathers, the window lickers. You better not be Yankee boy on Monday. Okay, you're going to tell me what to do. All I give you is Unvarnished Honesty, which is the title of my 15th book, Unvarnished Honesty. And that's what it will be today. The Yankees laid an egg in Boston. They were embarrassed in Boston. They played terrible baseball in Boston. And the one thing that bothered me, and I mentioned it just quickly on Friday, is when they came out after taking 2 out of 3 from Kansas City and said how everything was great. We've turned the corner. And I said, wow, that turned the corner. You should have lost the second game of that series. You almost lost it. The game that you really battered Kansas City was the third game. They didn't turn any corner. They still cannot beat American League East teams. They're 0-6 against the Boston Red Sox. So if you have any hope or dream of winning the American League East. I don't know. It might be a good idea to beat the Red Sox more than you lose to them. Might be a good idea to beat Tampa Bay more than you lose to them. And by the way, losing three games in Boston, you're now in fourth place in the American League East. And if the season ended right now, you wouldn't be going to the playoffs. So let's sit back and really take stock of what's going on here. And Don has mentioned this a lot. Go back to 2020, the beginning of last year. This is a 500 team. Right now, they're a 500 team, and they're trending at 500. Now, I guarantee you they could go out tonight and start and win 3 out of 4 against the Angels, because the Angels aren't good. The Yankees are better than the bad teams. They're better than the average teams, and they can't beat the really good teams in the AL East. They beat the White Sox. They beat the Astros. They beat the Indians. They've beaten decent teams. But when it comes to the American League East, they can't do it. They have the only thing consistent about the Yankees so far this year is their utter inconsistency. And it's hard to explain. It's hard to come up with a solution. That's not for me to do. I don't know what the solution is. But I will tell you this, something has to change.
Yeah, I just don't know what that is. I've been racking my brain basically the entire weekend. They are what they are, Michael. I mean, we always bring out the Bill Parcells quote, but it's applicable here. You are what your record says you are. That's what they are. There are three games above 500. Sometimes they get hot and they'll climb maybe to 7 or 8 over and then fall back down to 3 over. We're 77 games in. If you count the playoffs last year and the 60 games last year, this is a full season of eh. That's what they are. They're not god-awful, Peter, where you just like scorched earth. Because they tease you. And mathematically, they're still very much alive to make a playoff spot. But this is what they are. And I don't know how you change it. What are you doing? Who are you trading? Who are you going out in to get? What is going to be the move that's going to make all of a sudden everybody hit with runners in scoring position? What's the move where all of a sudden now home runs are going to come with runners on instead of solo shots? And what's the move that's going to make them play better against their own division? Which has been a bit of a struggle over the last couple of years, too. But last year it was the Rays. This year it's the Red Sox. What's the move, Michael? Who's the player out there you can get? Who is the Kurt Gibson that the Dodgers went out and picked up that changed everything, changed the culture? Where's that move? And who are you trading to make that happen?
Well, there's a lot of layers to this. Because what we saw yesterday was Gerrit Cole pitched really poorly. And if that's an issue, because the first 8 games of the year, Gerrit Cole had an under 2 ERA. And his next 8 starts have not been good. Now, he's had decent starts in there, but the ERA is almost triple what it was in the first 8 starts. And I'll just say, okay, he just had a bad day. Because the spin rate wasn't off that much. He just didn't have good location on his slider and his fastball. But there's a couple of things that I think that Don hit the point that everybody wants to try to avoid because it's so simplistic. We can look at the fact that Andujar threw the ball to the wrong base in the first inning. Simple stuff. And I've always said I'm never going to criticize somebody for doing something physically wrong because I couldn't do it. But mentally, I can play the game better than some of these guys are playing. Clint Frazier threw a ball over cutoff man's head. I mean, we see this all too often. They run the bases terribly. On Friday, and I believe that Phil Nevin is truly one of the better third base coaches in all of baseball. And he got a guy thrown out at home plate by Hunter Renfro, the best arm in baseball, by the way, statistically, by about 10 feet. Very odd for Phil to do that because we hardly ever mention his name since he's been the third base coach. That's how good he's been. So he gets a slide with me. That's number one. But Don hit the main thing. You know why the Yankees are 3 games over 500 and not 13 games over 500? They don't hit with runners in scoring position. Their number with runners in scoring position is about equal to what the Pirates do. They cannot get the big hit. Why? I don't know. Now, we talk about the double plays and the strikeouts. Well, let's pump the brakes for a second. Nobody strikes out more than Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay is essentially tied for first place. Now, the double plays. You know who the Yankees are neck and neck with double plays with?
Yep.
The Houston Astros. So that doesn't mean that you lose games because you hit into double plays, because the Yankees are set up to hit into double plays. They're a right-handed team. They don't have speed. They hit the ball hard. There's people on base because of walks. So you're going to hit into double plays. That doesn't mean you lose. You lose because you can't get hits with runners in scoring position. And the Yankees have been unable to do it. Period. They've been unable to do it. So, here's the deal. This is what I see from this Yankee team. They carry themselves like they're the best team in baseball. Like, they don't have to work to straighten this out. It's going to happen. You know what? We're so good, it's going to happen. Well, no. No, no, no. Since 2020, you're not the best team in baseball. And you can't walk around cocky and with a swagger because it hasn't happened. Even Aaron Boone said yesterday, we got punched in the mouth. You got punched in the mouth over and over and over again. They're running, stealing bases 6-0. Red Sox had no respect for the way the Yankees played for these three games. None. And you're gonna hang your hat on the fact and turn things around because you took 2 out of 3 from the Kansas City Royals? That shouldn't be something to pound your chest over. That should be, we should sweep the Kansas City Royals. But you struggled to take 2 out of 3. That's the thing that's lost. You was trailing in the 8th inning of the 2nd game. And you had a battle back against, by the way, a brutal bullpen. And then you blew them out in game 3. You finally broke their back because they had no pitching left. Okay, those wins count. I'm not taking them away. But the attitude, well, you know what? We know the talent in this room. Really? You know the talent in the room? Well, where is it? Let me just, I don't want to pick on one guy, but let's look at one thing that's startling, Don and Peter.
All right.
Gleyber Torres, in his first 2 years in the big leagues, in his age 20 and 21 seasons, or 21 and 22 seasons, he hit 62 home runs. 62 home runs. Now, you would mention Gleyber Torres with any other young infielder in baseball at that point. You know how many home runs he has since the beginning of 2020? 6. Where'd the power go? Where did the power go? So, that right there is a problem. And everybody's jumping on the fact, well, he shouldn't be a shortstop. Listen, he's been a little shaky in the field the last couple of games. He's been pretty good for most of the last 2 months. He started off dreadful. I think he's tightened his game up. They're not losing because Gleyber Torres is a shortstop. There's so much about this team that's frustrating. Here's one thing I thought of, Don and Peter. They gave away Adam Ottavino. Gave him away. That's not hyperbole. They gave him to the Red Sox. Gave him to the Red Sox because the Red Sox were willing to take on his $9 million salary. Here, they didn't get anything in return. Here's Adam Ottavino. Because they wanted to stay under the salary threshold. They felt that they could get Darren O'Day for a lot less. And to be honest, Ottavino pitched poorly last year. But what you did, let's say the United States and Canada are like butting heads. And all of a sudden you sent nuclear warheads as a gift to Canada. Adam Ottavino, when he's right, you can't hit him if you're right-handed. You can't. The Yankees are a right-handed team. So when the Red Sox bring in Adam Ottavino, there's a lane of 7 players that are not going to be pinch hit for that are right-handed. You handed him one of the secrets to beating you. If they straightened him out, you know what? They straightened him out. That's a head-scratcher. Another one that Yankee fans, I'm sure, are just furious about. Garrett Whitlock pitched twice this series. And pitched great both times. Had the bases loaded, 1 out, when the Yankees had a chance to rally yesterday. And he had a strikeout, and then he got a pop-up. A strikeout of LeMahieu, a pop-up of Judge. They didn't score. Again, they don't get runners in scoring position. The Red Sox took Garrett Whitlock off the Yankees as a Rule 5 draft pick. Now, what that means is if you're 3 years in an organization, the organization has to put you on the 40-man roster or risk losing you to another team. Well, the Yankees did their math, and they decided we're not putting Whitlock on the 40, and we'll gamble that nobody's going to take him. Red Sox took him. So that means the Red Sox give the Yankees $50,000 for Whitlock. But Whitlock has to stay on the Red Sox roster the entire year. If they want to send him down, they have to offer him back to the Yankees, and the Yankees give them $25,000 back. I know that's a lot of gobbledygook, but here's what I'm getting to. So who did they choose to protect on the 40-man roster instead of Garrett Whitlock, who looks like a keeper? Brooks Kreisky, Nick Nelson. Just two. Those are two names I'm giving you that they chose that those guys were more valuable than Garrett Whitlock. Now, Garrett Whitlock was coming off Tommy John surgery. I get it. But from everything I heard, the Yankees were very hesitant to not put Whitlock on the 40-man roster. They didn't want to risk losing it. Now they lose him to their arch rivals, and you kept Brooks Kreisky and Nick Nelson instead. These are bad looks for the Yankees. I'm sorry. Now, all the columns are out there, all the people on Twitter. Well, what are they going to do? What are they going to do? I don't know what they're going to do. There's too much fixing to be done. I don't know what they're going to do. And people want Boone fired. Really, this is an Aaron Boone problem? You really believe this is an Aaron Boone problem? He's making them not hit with runners in scoring position. These are people that have hit with runners in scoring position before. Then they want Brian Cashman fired. You're not going to fire a GM in the middle of the year. What's that going to do anyway? What's that going to do anyway? And then the big dream of people online, well, you know, they got to bring in Buck Showalter. You really believe that Buck Showalter and Brian Cashman can coexist? You think that Buck Showalter is going to allow Brian Cashman's people to make out lineup suggestions for him? You really believe that that's going to happen? So you could sit there, pie in the sky, all of Yankee Nation on Twitter, Yankee Twitter, and rage into the wind. We got to hear what Hal Steinbrenner is going to say. I believe that Hal's going to talk to the media this week. It's going to be interesting to see what he has to say. I think the only thing that moves the needle right now, I don't know if Don and Peter agree, how's this week going to be attendance-wise? Are there people going to come see Shohei Ohtani? Is the stadium going to be overrun with Met fans over the weekend? Are they? That moves the needle. If the ratings on Yes crater, that moves the needle. It's going to be very, very interesting. And this three-game sweep, what that did was moved you into fourth place. You were dreaming big. They closed it within three. Remember, they took the nine-game deficit, and they made it three within a week and a half. Well, now it's six again, and now you're in fourth place. What next? Don, I wish I had the answers. I don't know what's next.
Well, everything that you just said sounds like this team was not built correctly. There's some holes in the way they were built, some decisions that have been made that didn't work out. And that's been a problem with Brian Cashman developing pitching. He'll find guys off the scrap heap that actually overachieve offensively, whether it's LeMahieu, who became even a superstar in the first 2 years that he was here, or Luke Voit, who was just an outcast in with the Cardinals, and going out and getting Hicks from Minnesota. There's been moments, but none pitching-wise, nobody gets better pitching coming to the Yankees. That doesn't happen. That's a function of the way the team is built. You know, two right-handed, a function of the way the team is built. So if you're looking for change, then the change would have to come with the way the team is built. You're not changing that on June 28th. Even if you fired Brian Cashman, what general manager is going to be able to come here and fix it in the middle of a year with a month left before the trading deadline? Everything we're talking about has to happen after the season. So that has to be discussed when the season comes to an end. But that has to be on the table, Michael. It just has to be. You can't just keep talking about we're going to be fine, we're going to be fine. So if you're going to make a change in the way the team is run, then Aaron Boone's probably going to be gone anyway. So do you make the move at manager just because it's the only thing to do? Because if you bring in a new general manager, Peter, what do you think that new general manager is going to do? Probably let Aaron Boone go.
Although it's funny because – based on what we're starting to see, and you said this, Don, earlier, looking at this 77 games, the playoffs, and last season, I don't think you're not finding a problem with Aaron Boone. You're finding a team that has not been assembled as well as people initially thought. So the fact of the matter is, and I'm not a call for Brian Cashman's head kind of guy, we may have to accept that the real thing here and the person it's really going to come down on is Brian Cashman. And you're right, Don. In the end, if that happens, they'll get a new GM who will bring in his own manager. But really, they wouldn't need to because it's really not about Boone.
No,
it's about how the team's been assembled.
But you have to ask yourself, how do I salvage this season? Because as bad as and quote-unquote unwatchable it is for fans, they're still within striking distance of not just the wild card but the division. Now, I don't think they're going to get there the way they're playing, but the facts are the facts that this season is still salvageable. So what do you do to save this season? I don't think there's a trade to be made. I don't think there's a player that you can pick up. Where are you going to put them?
Well, they have to make a trade. They have to have a left-handed outfielder. You can't keep playing Judge in center field because Andujar's below par in left and Frazier's below par in right. You're weakening three spots. You've got to get a left-handed center fielder. You just have to.
So what do you do? Are you going to give up these prospects that they never want to give up?
Well, you know what? You've got to gauge. That's what a front office has to do. You have to gauge, are we good enough right now if we make a move to make the playoffs. And, you know, people that want the manager change. Well, if you're going to change the manager and you keep the GM, it would only be a cosmetic move. The guy that Brian Cashman would bring in would probably be Carlos Mendoza, who's highly coveted throughout baseball. He actually had two interviews with the Red Sox for their job.
But it would be nonsense.
But, right, is that going to change the way the Yankees do their job? It's still going to be information coming from upstairs because Mendoza's right. in on the analytic thing anyway. And if you force Buck Showalter, just say Buck Showalter, even Mike Socia on Brian Cashman, those managers are not letting the front office manage the team. They're not. They're just not. And this is not a knock on Boone. Boone was brought in because Brian wants a manager that will be in total lockstep with the front office. And Aaron is, because Aaron believes that stuff. But if you bring in Mike Socia or Buck Showalter, I'm sorry. Those guys have been around too long. They are not taking that right. many suggestions, and I put that in air quote, and employing them on the field. But they're just not.
But if you're Hal, Michael, and you're really considering a major change to the front office, right, then how much are you going to let that guy do? That could damage whatever's going to happen come up next season, right? I mean, if you believe that Brian Cashman's not good enough, then why are you going to let him make trades at the deadline? See, you're kind of just stuck. I don't know what you do. I don't know what you do other than just the cosmetic move of, all right, we're just going to fire Boone. We'll see if that kind of spurs this team on. They seem to really care about that kind of thing. That's why Joe Girardi's not here anymore. Because the fans are getting sick of it. Michael, if you change the manager because of the post-game press conference, it blew up in your face. Because right now, Boone's being made fun of by the fans. I'm not saying it's right, but they're tired of hearing, oh, it's coming together. Oh, you know, we understand we're better than this. We're going to figure it out. They're losing the press conference. So all the reasons you brought Boone in now, it's become laughable because he doesn't have any answers. He may know how to say it, but these fans are smart. They're not going to be fooled. So do you just make the move just to kind of salvage the season and then get to the real work during the offseason? Because if this team misses the playoffs, Michael, can you really bring Boone back?
I think if they don't make the playoffs, I think there's going to be changes. I don't know what they're going to be, but I would think there's going to be changes. And I would tell you, overall, I think Brian's done a really good job as a general manager. Excellent job. But this team is ill-conceived. This team has not been put together the right way. It's too right-handed. It's not athletic. It doesn't run the bases well. It's bad defensively. I'm sorry. And there were way too many gambles in the pitching rotation. Way too many. The bottom line is there's a problem with the way this team is put together. Can Brian salvage the season with some moves? Yes, maybe. But at some point, you've got – like, remembering, I think it was 2009, they were floundering in April, and they brought up a little-known second baseman, Robinson Cano, turned out to be great. You've got to make some – I mean, how bad could Estevan Florial be compared to what they're doing? Clint Frazier's slugging percentage is anemic. The left fielder, Andujar, who I like, has 8 runs batted in. Nobody is hitting in big spots. Nobody. That's why they're losing. So I think it's an endemic problem that I don't know if one person can change. Maybe they have a run in them. I believe they have a run in them. This team has been streaky. But here's the deal. The only way they score runs is via the home run. They don't get runners. They don't get hits with runners in scoring position. They don't. Saturday, they had a chance to tie the game. Judge struck out. Yesterday, LeMahieu struck out. Judge popped up. They're not making the plays defensively, but it all comes down to hitting with runners in scoring position, and they are doing it at such a rate that they're pretty much equal to the Pittsburgh Pirates right now. That's a sad state of affairs. And if you don't think you have anything in the minor leagues to help you out, that's a problem in itself. That there's nothing that could help you in the minor leagues. This kid Park can help you. He's got an OPS of over 1,000. He can't help you. He's not better than what you have. And another thing, there are people that are underperforming here that deserve to be sent down to AAA as a message to them. And they can't do it because there's nobody there. There's nobody there. There's nobody there to replace these people that should be sent down. So you're playing with subpar performers right now, a team that's not athletic, a team that doesn't hit with runners in scoring position, and the defense with forcing Aaron Judge into center field is subpar. Who would have thought that on June 28th, the Yankees would be struggling and Gary Sanchez would not be the issue? at all. Gary Sanchez, not the issue at all.
How many different ways can you say this isn't a good team without the direct words, this isn't a good team?
Well, when you're 6.5 games out and in fourth place, you're not a good team, Peter.
But and what they got to do is, Michael, whatever they're going to decide to move on this season, it's going to have to be sooner than later. The deadline is July 30th. And you can't just go, let's say they sweep the Angels. Okay, everything's okay. No, it's not okay. You don't want to talk yourself into, Michael, doing nothing because the team ends up having like a really great July. Right? You almost have to go under the assumption that it's not going to turn around because you keep getting teased by the team and then we end up in the exact same place. It's like in two-week cycles. You know, they drop down to three games over. Boone's got to go. Cashman's got to go. Then all of a sudden they'll win 8 of 10. Everything's okay. Then they lose 8 out of 10. You know, everything's bad again. We can't keep yo-yoing. It's just this is what they are. We're 77 games in. David Cone said it. This is half the season now. This isn't a slump. This is what they are. So don't get sucked into a really good week. Don't get sucked into a really good road trip.
And we did get sucked into 5-1, remember? And if you take a look back at it, what gave me the heebie-jeebies was they swept Toronto and Detroit, in Buffalo, right?
Yeah.
Every single one of those games had to come from behind, and they won by the skin of their backside. They didn't blow Toronto out. Those are really, really hard-fought games that they almost lost. Now, there's going to be games like that. And then 2 or 3 against Kansas City, that was not good. They should have lost game 2. They should have lost 2 of 3. And then they go into Boston, and really, there's no other way to say it. They got embarrassed by the Red Sox. They've been embarrassed 6 games by the Red Sox within 2 weeks.
So what does that tell you? That tells you that even if this team figured out a way to get into the playoffs, what kind of run are they going to make when you're only facing good teams and you're only facing good bullpens and you're only facing really good offensive teams? Because remember, this problem that's happening all year has been happening in the postseason for like the last 10 years. Like hitting with runners in scoring position has been an issue for this team in the postseason. So we're all clamoring for them to maybe make a run, maybe take advantage and get into the playoffs. What good is that going to be if you're not going to be able to beat those teams and make a run?
All right, let's take a quick timeout. Now we're going to let you talk. A lot of people are angry. Obviously they are. And I'm sure the Yankees monitor this show, so they're going to hear what the fans say. And they don't have to monitor the show. They can monitor social media. I mean, people are going crazy. Crazy. It was not a good weekend in Boston. Time in New England took them away from the top of the American League East. That's what happened. That's the Pinstripe Report brought to you by Truly Hard Seltzer. Try Truly Hard Seltzer, 100 calories, 1 gram sugar, 5% alcohol, and 27 different flavors. Truly Hard Seltzer Beverage Company. Please drink responsibly.
And I'm a fan, so I'm a fan of Low, so I got the Barry Manilow reference.
I know you did. David didn't yesterday, and he was very apologetic that he didn't.
Also, you
sweat like I stole something.
Again?
Oh.
Peter, this was an issue on Friday.
Wait. It's 95 degrees out.
No.
I had to cut away because I was watching Michael just mop up sweat off his face.
It's hot.
It's not right what's happening.
But don't you worry. Game time, I'll have a jacket and tie on.
See, that's not right.
Those are the rules. There's no 95-degree rule
anymore.
Why? So when you have a stroke, is that – well, at least he looked good. So what is that? So is the announcing –
that's how you'll go out.
You know, live hard, drive fast, make a good-looking corpse. Is that like, yes, his mantra? Like, you know what? If he dies, at least he'll be in a suit.
The rules have changed. It used to be 90 or over. We wore the – the polo shirt, but now it's jacket and tie until you die.
What's the logic?
It's a look. I guess it's I like how we look with the jacket and tie, but I mean there are days that we're going to be broadcasting up the surface of the sun today. I don't think you'd wear a jacket.
Well,
tie
I got news
day.
For you. You could wear a Gucci tuxedo from head to toe.
Right.
And if the Yankees played the way they played this weekend, the viewers aren't going to like it. And if the Yankees are playing well, you guys could stand there naked and no one would notice. So how about we worry about the product on the field, not the schlubs they got calling the game, with all due respect.
Schlubs.
I'll tell David you said that, and Paul, and Meredith. The Mike
not
and Kay
Meredith.
Show on 98.7 ESPN is brought to you by GEICO. The real value in car insurance isn't how much you save. It's also the kind of service you get. Good thing GEICO's been perfecting both for over 75 years. It's Kay, LaGreca, Rosenberg, and you on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Live hard, drive fast, make a good-looking corpse.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN. Everybody get your roll on. I don't show you, and she doesn't want no slow song.
Had a man last year, life goes on. Haven't let the thing lose, girl, in so long. Yeah. This portion of the Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN is brought to you by Truly Hard Seltzer. Try Truly Hard Seltzer, 100 calories, 1 gram sugar, 5% alcohol, and 27 different flavors. Truly Hard Seltzer Beverage Company, please drink responsibly. Peter, how's the album doing?
It's good. It's good. You know, the slow burn continues, which is what the case is when you drop something that's awesome and not just commercial nonsense. I still have some fun press coming up, some podcasts here and there, some hip-hop podcasts, some non-hip-hop stuff. And I have a show coming up, too, July 10th in Bushwick, Supply and Demand. So thank you for asking. You know, I want to ask, how is your fantastic book doing?
It's doing pretty well, and the audio book, I think, comes out today, so you can get it on audio as well.
I don't hear enough of you, so I would like to get that.
I don't think you have to get it. I mean, if you're driving and you can't read a book, then that would be the reason to get an audiobook.
Now, can
I'll call you and talk to you if you need to hear my voice.
Can I ask you guys a question?
Yeah.
Saw a lot of tweets Friday while I was trying to relax and have a day off. I go on Twitter quickly, and everyone is tweeting about aliens. And I didn't understand what was happening on the show. Because usually I'm the one who's seen as the one who turns the show into nonsense and rambling about God knows what. What happened on Friday?
Well, the big question that we had, and Andrew was the one who really fouled it up, Don and I were in lockstep, so was DPH. I said that if an alien landed in front of you today, Peter,
okay,
and said, you come with us and we guarantee you eternal life, would you take it? Both Don and I said, yes, especially if we could take our family. Would you take it? Andrew said, no, it could be a trap. Whole deal.
I love my life here on Earth.
There's such a big caveat, though, you added about taking your family.
Well, so, the first part of the question is, if they come for you and they say, you come with us, you live forever, would you go?
Well, no, because that could mean live forever with them.
Yeah.
Why do I want to live forever away from the people that I love?
Well, those people are going to die anyway, so this way you get to live forever, and you can watch them from afar.
I just love how, Don, don't you just, and I know you guys run lockstep on this one, coincidentally, Don, but don't you love how every one of Michael's questions comes back to the same thing?
Death.
He just doesn't want to die.
No.
Yeah.
You're
really uncovering a lot.
When Michael, unfortunately, when he one day, if somehow Father Time catches up with him and we lose him, you realize that no one can make each other feel better by saying we know he was ready to go.
No.
It'll never be true.
No. Let me have some dead people.
His head could be in a jar and I'll know. He'll make eye contact with me, say, no, don't kill me. I can make this work.
I know. They'll be like, you know, Jody, we can keep Michael around a bit longer, but we're gonna have to remove his head from his body. And we're gonna replace his real head with a mouse head. You'd be fine with that.
Yeah, sure. Well, when I met Jody first date, I said never. Plug pulling. No, that's not even a discussion. Because they'll find a cure the next day.
Now, question.
I don't think they've got a cure for head in a jar, Michael.
Yeah, that's the thing. So here's the thing. God forbid, 2 years you've done nothing. They have already told Jody, we've seen this before. He's never coming back on. It's a wrap. And Jody's in there every day visiting you. The kids holding on. And years are passing by. You want them to keep doing this for the rest of their lives?
Yes.
Wow. It's incredible, Don. There need to be scientists in Sweden studying this man 24/7, 365. Documentaries aren't enough. We need a Ken Burns Civil War just about the inner workings of Michael's brain.
But I don't need the kids to visit me every day if I'm in a vegetative state.
All right. But so you don't need that.
I need Jody to keep pumping all the money into keeping me alive.
Okay, now what if we're getting into you're going to spend all the kids' college money?
You know what? I earned it. I didn't get any inheritance, so they'll
figure it out.
Same level as me, yep.
Wow, and what a sitcom. Then your kids end up moving back to the Bronx and having to start over just like you did.
They'd be way better off than when they're growing up now.
Wow. Mike, Don, this is something else.
They're going to end up having a party after you're gone.
Why?
Well, because the way you're painting it is that you're sapping them of all their money. They're going to have a celebration when you're finally gone. Like,
their money? No. I work two jobs a day. It's my money.
No, but that money's going to run out.
Right. They'll be in their own money.
And now they're supporting just keeping you on life support. They can't communicate with you. You're functionally gone, right? But you still refuse to let go. And all the lawyers had written it up that they can't do anything. You're just sucking up all their money. They've got 2-3 jobs just to be able to keep that machine going. Believe me, when you finally do go, they're going to have a party.
Eric on Twitter said, "We will never lose Michael K. How dare you, Peter? His greatness will live forever. Can the aliens just take Peter? Take him. Leave us the Hall of Famer, Michael K. Society needs his wisdom and knowledge."
Wow. Well, you know,
Thank you, Eric.
I'm not going to fight with Eric. He makes some salient points. But I couldn't go with the aliens if I don't know where I'm going. What if I'm going to live forever being probed?
Why is it everybody we ask has to ruin the fun of it?
Because they're jerks, and we're not.
This is not to serve man. This isn't some Twilight Zone. This is going to be Nirvana. You are going to go everything you want. Heaven, everything you want that place to be is what it's going to be. Anything you want is going to be there. The only sacrifice is that you're only allowed to bring your immediate family, or if it's a very select few people. But you're going to have to say goodbye to 99% of the people that you know and love and work with to go spend eternity without them, but in the greatest place in the world.
Well, that's a good question. You see, you framed it better, Don. Thank you for the full frame. Now, I'm in a tough spot, though. Let's just be honest. I don't want to get too dark here. But, you know. Mom and dad are old. I'm divorced. I have a beautiful, wonderful girlfriend, but I don't have children yet.
And I don't think she gets on the spaceship. She hasn't earned that.
And we've only been dating for a year and a month.
You guys might end up hating each other's guts for eternity.
So I'm in a tough spot. Now, if I bring my parents, they get eternal life also?
Yeah.
Oof. And what about my brother's family?
Yeah.
But then I'm just stuck being the uncle for the rest of eternity? It's just me and my brother's family?
Listen, it only made sense. It only made sense for me, Michael, and Andrew because we're done as far as we're concerned, right?
Right.
We found the person we want to spend the rest of our life with, and we're set from that standpoint. You're still up in the air, so it's tough for you, because you're still a work in progress.
It's a great point, Don.
All right, but Andrew's. Listen, Andrew.
And so, what was your logic, Andrew? Why didn't you want to go?
Well, I'm very happy here, and I've got a lot of people aside from even just my immediate family that I'd have a hard time saying goodbye to. I like my life on Earth, like I said in the drop, and also too, I don't think my way of looking at it ruins the fun. I think it is. It's probably more fun,
right,
than just going through all the caveats and the compromises that run through your head for a scenario like that, rather than just it's Nirvana. Do you want to live there or not? I like to think about all the things that could go wrong. I think that makes it more fun.
But you kill me, Michael, for my friends and my Land of Misfit Toys. Do you realize he's not gonna this eternity that we're talking about, this Nirvana that we're talking about? He doesn't want to sacrifice Brown Sure. Bill Nye, guys he sleeps in the same bed with in Cleveland for
Spooning.
An Eagle Brown game.
Look, I'll get behind anything. We had our first group dinner. We brought it back for the first time in 16 months last Friday. It was glorious. So much fun.
Brownshire still there?
Absolutely.
Pathetic.
He's a keystone member of it.
What I'm hoping, Michael, is that this happens and he turns it down. And then 20 years later, he's at dinner with these same people, and he just throws his fork down and stands up and goes, "I gave up Nirvana for this."
I know. By the way,
restaurant.
I think that's a great take, Don. Don, let's just lift the curtain up all the way here. You're not going to be able to admit this on the air, so just text me afterwards. Michael's only including the caveat of needing his family for appearances. He's ditching everyone for eternal life. You know that. I am not saying Michael doesn't love his family. He unquestionably loves his family more than anything else on earth. But if they said, Michael, you get to have eternal life, unfortunately, no one can go with you. He's still going.
The equation is tough because no one loves their family as much as I do, or more than I do. They might as much as. But no one fears death as much as I do. So it's a tough calculation.
But you're right, tough. Peter, I'll just say this. And Michael's going to get mad at me, but it's how I feel. I think he gives up his family for an eternity of Yankee games and chicken parms. Like, that's it.
But
like
it's
he just goes to a place where he just calls Yankee games and eats chicken parm and maybe like Domino's off the chest.
Yep.
And that's it. And the occasional center stage and done. I think he leaves his family for that.
What we did say, Peter, is I would like you to make the phone call, though, because I think that you could probably get the most out of it. You have to make the phone call to Ruco and go, by the way, Michael's doing Yankee games forever.
Oh, I got to tell you. What a great call. I would relish that call.
Again,
it'll be fun.
How about this call? That Michael's leaving for eternity, and one of the people he brought with him was Ian Eagle. And Ian Eagle's going to call Net games forever, and Michael's going to call Yankee games forever.
And we also have to bring along Breen, too. We got to block every single avenue.
That's just now. What started as the opportunity for eternity in bliss has become just an opportunity to screw Ryan Ruco. What an incredible turn of events!
But I mean, what is bliss for me?
Screwing people. Well,
now Don, I am told. I am told that you have a list, Daily Don, a late 3:45 Daily Don.
Because I never got a chance during our meeting. Now, let's face it, today's meeting was exactly why Michael doesn't want to have meetings.
Oh, yeah.
The exact reason.
Really?
And I never got in that I had one. And I guess I could wait to tomorrow, but it's based off of somebody's birthday, and so it's got to be done today.
Is this Mel Brooks?
I don't know.
Okay. All right, so we'll do the Daily Don next.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. I'm glad that you're actually saying it's his birthday and not Sidney Poitier-ing him. Kay LaGreca, Rosenberg and Juhon, yes, and 98.7 ESPN.
No, didn't. Turns 92. Dear God.
Thanks for listening to the Michael Kay Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Another Don segment.
We're doing the list, Michael. I don't care if you don't like it.
The Daily Don.
I'll fight to the death for this list.
It's the Daily Don Show. He makes lists.
Take it away, Donnie.
I had a tough one today because, like, there are two birthdays today that are pretty significant in Hollywood. But I went with Mel Brooks because he's a little bit more significant than John Cusack. But Cusack would have made for a nice top five, right, Peter?
Why not?
But maybe we'll save that for next year. But right now, top five Mel Brooks movies.
Mm. I'll go first.
Okay.
I guess you'd have to start with Blazing Saddles.
Yeah. I mean, that's the gold standard, right? That is funny every which way that you slice it. And incorporating Richard Pryor as a writer in that movie and would have been the sheriff. Yeah, but he was just too tough for the studio to hire because they were afraid that he would spontaneously combust. But so he could have been in the movie, but Mel Brooks did hire him as a writer, and he did a great job. And it wouldn't be the jokes that you think, like Mongo just pawning life. That was Richard Pryor. Great stuff, great movie. Blazing Saddles, number one.
Let's go to my era, my childhood. Spaceballs. See if it makes a cut.
You know, Spaceballs, 1987, I have as number three. It's also Marco's favorite movie, but it's got every bit the laughs that any Mel Brooks movie has. It is great. What's the matter, Colonel Sanders? Chicken? What a great movie.
How about Silent Movie?
Yeah, I thought about it, but I don't have it in the top five.
Oh.
Who are you taking out?
We'll see.
Who are you taking out?
Never seen it in my life. Let's go with History of the World Part 1.
I do not have it in the top five. Great
movie.
Who are you taking out? That'll be the question.
How about The Producers?
The Producer is a classic 1967. I have at number five. I think it blows away the one that was on Broadway and then the more recent 2005 version with Matthew Broderick, of course. But classic movie. Zero Mostel as the star of the movie, and I have it at number five.
How about Young Frankenstein, Donald?
Oh, Young Frankenstein, I have it number two. This is the brilliance of Mel Brooks.
Tell us.
The Blazing Saddles and Young Frankenstein, I believe, I've got it at one and two. You can go either way. Those are his two best movies, right? Came out same year,
it's
1974.
Crazy.
Tell me how many directors had their two best movies come out in the same year, Young Frankenstein number two. So we've got Blazing Saddles one, Young Frankenstein two, Spaceballs three, The Producers five, and one of my personal favorites, I have it four.
High Anxiety.
The great, if you want to, I don't have time to tell it here, and I cannot tell the story to do it justice the way Mel Brooks did. But of course, Peter, I don't know if you ever saw High Anxiety.
Never have.
It is taking all of the Hitchcock movies. It's a parody on all of the Hitchcock movies. And he felt that it was only right to Kiss the Ring. He did it with Spielberg with Spaceballs, and he did it with Hitchcock in 1977, and he's got a great story about going to his house for dinner and asking Hitchcock if it would be okay if he made this movie. And it's a great story that Mel tells. But he got the okay, and Hitchcock loved it, and it's a classic, 1977. High Anxiety number four.
So good job.
My list.
God, we nailed that. That was very easy.
Yeah, but those are the History of the World part. History of the World Part One. You could go Silent Movie. Life Stinks. Not one of my personal favorites. That's why I don't have it in top five. But those, I feel very comfortable. I think the only thing you could really argue is the order. But nobody can tell me Blazing Saddles isn't one.
Happy birthday, Mel.
95.
95, and like, what is it with a couple of the people from that era that are just like...
Maybe they got on a spaceship.
Yeah. Who else am I thinking of?
Carl Reiner.
Yeah, they were best friends. They'd watch Jeopardy every day, and we lost Carl a few months ago, maybe in a year ago, at 97.
But hold on, there's another one, too. Norman Lear.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
And Norman Lear's doing something, too. I think he's producing or directing something that's coming out, like, for TV pretty soon.
I really am amazed when I hear, like, a guy like Norman Lear taking on projects. I won't do anything long-term now, and I'm 60.
But that's the thing. So this is why your whole wanting to live forever thing is garbage. It's stupid.
Why?
What's the point of living forever if you're already you're already settling right now?
No, these guys kept grinding. But the reason I'm not grinding now is I don't know if I have that much time, so I don't want to leave a project unfinished.
But they didn't know if they had that much time then.
I know.
You're doing this whole life thing wrong.
Yeah, how's it working out?
Well, I admit I don't think well.
We don't know. No, we don't know. Again, it's working out right now, but again, Michael is trying to get eternal life. He's trying to live forever. We won't know how it worked out. But Peter's right. Keep working, man. You know, Mel Brooks was using his voice for Toy Story 4 in 2019.
Hold on. By the way,
keep working. You got to keep working. That's the thing.
Mike, Don, you know how old Mel Brooks was when Spaceballs came out? He was 61.
Yeah.
When Spaceballs came out. And guess what? Spaceballs was over 30 years ago.
87. That's why I think Tarantino was on Real Time this week, and he's only going to make one more movie. He's 58 years old. What's he doing?
But I think that's an act because he said that since the beginning, so he can't back off now. He said he was going to do 9 movies.
He wants to go out on top, and I get that, but Keep working. Michael, if you really want to live, well, I think that's the common thread, right? Carl Reiner was doing hot in Cleveland's just a few years ago.
Well, I'm working, Don. I'm just not taking on new projects.
Yeah, but Peter's right. I never heard anybody that wants to live forever and can't wait to retire.
No. Throttle down, not retire. Throttle down. No human being works two full-time jobs.
Yeah, said the man that just finished a book.
Yeah.
Said the man that's going to do a Yankee game tonight after doing a 4.5-hour extravaganza on the radio. Peter, if he's throttling down, I don't know what gear he's in right now, but it's not fifth. It's like 10th.
Yeah, no, I shouldn't have even listened to what he said before because he's obviously working hard as ever.
Well, you know what I have
30
now?
30 years just to go down the first gear.
I have today's Yankee starting lineup.
All right.
Bigelow T. Leading off and playing second base, DJ LeMahieu, Aaron Judge in right, Gary Sanchez behind the plate. The DH is Giancarlo Stanton cleaning up. Batting fifth, first baseman Luke Voit. Gleyber Torres at shortstop will bat sixth. Batting seventh, third baseman Gio Urshela. Miguel Andujar in left field will bat eighth and batting ninth. And playing center field is Brett Gardner. They'll be facing Dylan Bundy, who's 1-7, 6.68. That's why it's hard to like make snap judgment because the Yankees should beat the Angels tonight significantly easily. They have Michael King going for them, 0-3, 4.05. But again, Dylan Bundy's 1-7, 6.68. So I would just say don't get caught in the ebb and flow where if they win 3 out of 4 against the Angels, all is great and good again.
Yeah.
The one thing that's been consistent about this team is their inconsistency and their inability to go off on a real run other than after they started off 5-10. They did go off on a run then.
Now, if you want major changes, Michael, then this is not the team. They're not going to play poorly enough for that to happen, right? Because if you want the bottom to drop out, then I think you'll see the changes that I think a lot of Yankee fans want. I think they're too good to finish 10 games under. I think they're just good enough to stay afloat, to tease you, but I don't think they're good enough to win a championship. And by the way, somebody on Cameo by the name of Lewis paid $28 to tell me that I should read the Met lineup and you do the Yankee lineup.
I'm all for it.
Wow.
I mean, he could have just tweeted me or
he
sat on
cash,
hold for 20 minutes and asked, but he paid Peter cash money that ain't never going to play out.
Never is going to play out, ever.
Well, let's wait on the Met starting lineup. Luis Rojas has been very slow with this. That's today's Yankee starting lineup brought to you by Bigelow Tea. Bigelow Tea is a proud supporter of the Michael Kay Show and the official hot tea of Joe Torre and the New York Yankees.
Now, the client pays a lot of money for Michael to do the read, so you could probably still do the read, and I can do the content, right?
Yeah, I think they would be okay with you doing the read, but I'll read it because some of the clients hate you, so this could be one of the cases.
That's a good point.
I was not suggesting that, guys. I was saying that there is something to having Michael Kay do the read because of your fame. I wasn't angling towards them hating me.
Well, both could be true, right?
No, you're right, but we don't, you know, that shouldn't be Michael's first guess, should it?
Do you want to see a tweet that might make you choke up?
Okay.
Rob Reiner sent this out 33 seconds ago. Today is my dad's best friend's birthday. Mel Brooks turns 95 today. I love you, Mel, and I thank you for loving my dad.
Aw.
Oh, it's not going to choke me up, but that's nice.
Yeah, because you don't care about old people. I do.
I love the old.
By the way, I sent out the book, Andrew. I sent out the book to Harry.
Speaking of the old, love that guy.
It was 98th birthday you missed, Peter.
Oh, it was Friday?
Well, it was actually Thursday, but we called him up on Friday and surprised him.
Actually, he calls Mel Brooks kid.
Yes, he does.
I take one day off, and I miss Harry's.
Also, happy birthday to Al Downing, who's 80, one of the nicest people in baseball, just a great guy. All right, let's settle down. Towel off, because we have to revisit a very tough time for a lot of New Yorkers. The New York Islanders lost a tough one. Their season is over. Don will break it down for the people and read the Met lineup. Big hour for Don right here on Yes at 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael Kay Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
All right, Yankees and the Angels. That is tonight, first game of a 4-game set. The Mets are in D.C. to play the Nationals, another makeup game for them. The Mets have had an incredibly unfortunate schedule and still persevered and still lead the National League East, so Met fans should be thrilled about that. Jacob DeGrom, it looks like he's going to start on Thursday, Don. not on Friday against the Yankees, and Gerrit Cole will start Friday against the Mets. And I did check. Saturday's game is a 1 o'clock start, and it is on Yes. So I stand corrected. Okay, so Aaron Boone met with the media earlier today and said something that I think that Yankee fans probably have wanted to hear him say. Here's Aaron Boone.
Work, prepare, and, you know, that's what I know is we need to, as best we can, be ready to go each and every night. You know, our season's on the line. You know, we've, you know, too many ups and downs of, you know, and we're in too good a division to have those ups and downs obviously continue. You know, we can't afford to play great for 2 weeks and struggle for a week. And, you know, not if we're going to make up ground. We've dug ourselves a little bit of a hole in the division, obviously. The good news is we still are in complete control of the script, but I don't think there's any question moving forward that night in and night out, our season's on the line. And, you know, and win or lose tonight, we got to come with that same mindset the next day and the next day. And hopefully we find that consistency that I know is in there.
Now, I appreciate Aaron saying the season's on the line, but when he says it's still in our hands, I mean, he's just being captain literal, man. So he's got 6 games out, and he still has 13 games remaining with the Red Sox and however many games with the Rays. And so, yeah, if they win every single one of them, yeah, everything's still in their hands, but that's a little disingenuous. They just have to play better against everybody. And, you know, the possibility of them playing well against the Angels is very, very real, very real. But there's so many layers here. So they want to work on fundamentals. And as I was doing the early part of the show, I'm looking out on the field, and the A's are actually doing PFP, which they never do, which is pitcher's fielding practice, because if you watch the Red Sox series, Domingo Germán fouled up 2 balls right back to the mound, and they've got to tighten things up. And if you want to step back and say, oh, that's a coach's fault, that's a manager's fault, I don't know what's going on is really their fault, but when players make fundamental mistakes, I don't think that at this level the managers and the coaches should have to teach an outfielder where to throw the ball. That's got to be inherent in them. They've got to learn that when they were young in the minors, even before that. To say that they have to tutor them, that's a little much, but okay, put it on the managers and the coaches. You can see that they're working really hard at it. Here is the bottom line, everybody. They don't hit with runners in scoring position. Yeah, I know they hit into double plays. So do the Astros, and the Astros have an unbelievable offense. I know they strike out. So do the Rays. The Rays strike out at what will be a record rate all time for Major League season, and the Rays still don't let it affect them. The Yankees simply don't get hits with runners in scoring position. Their average with runners in scoring position is absolutely dreadful, like bottom of the Major League dreadful. It's hard to understand, but that's what we're watching. So does changing the manager change that? Does Aaron Boone flipping over a table in the clubhouse a la Billy Martin, does that change that? I don't know. The things that offend me, though, is when people say, well, this team, these guys obviously don't even care. How do you say that? I mean, really, how do you say that? How do you know that? What's the manifestation of they don't care? And I've said this over and over again. When a team doesn't score, it looks like they're going through the motions. Doesn't mean they're going through the motions. They desperately want to win. This is what they do for a living. This is what they've done since they were children. They want to win. So you want them snapping a bat over their knee all the time? Not everybody is Paul O'Neill. And the reason why Paul O'Neill stood out is because there aren't a lot of people like that. There just aren't. So that's one thing. Another thing, and I'm getting it on Twitter, and I'm doing another show on Twitter as I do this one.
Oh, I love that show.
The Yankees should be spending way more money than they do. Why? $205 million is not enough to build a winning team? And then I've got another guy telling me, well, their revenues have risen exponentially in the last 9 years, and their payroll stayed the same. But their payroll is still tops in baseball or number two. This year it's number two behind the Dodgers. So I keep asking people, how much should they spend? As much as they need to. They should have a $300 million payroll. But when you're in a league like this, what good would it do? How have they spent their money so far? What good would it do throwing good money after bad? Just because they have a $300 million payroll, what problems would it solve right now? Wow. Everybody's saying, well, they should go out and they should get a big number two starter. But that's not why they're losing now. They're losing because they can't hit with runners in scoring position. And to think that this is not a business, that because their revenues have increased, that the expenditure is going to be the same. I guess you don't own a business. The Yankees obviously are doing good business, and they want to make money and make the money back from last year. Last year, by the way, they had a $240 million payroll, and they were knocked out in the division series. Spending money does not equal winning a championship. Now, it has in the past for the Yankees, but how have they spent the money? Is the expenditure that they have on Giancarlo Stanton, does that look good right now? Does that look good right now? How about Jacoby Ellsbury? Did that look good? Kagawa, did that look good? The last 5 years with Alex, did that look good? Come on, everybody. You just want to place blame on the Steinbrenners because they don't have a $400 million payroll. But it's not going to happen. And one other thing, Don, I'm sorry. One other thing. The people on Twitter, well, you know what? He's got to carry Hal's water. You know, he's not going to rip Hal. I don't know what I can tell you people. I don't know if there's ever been a broadcaster who broadcasted a team's game and had a talk show before the game and laid into the team like I do. I don't understand you. And listen, if you really I'm not being nasty. I'm not
Are
being
you sure?
threatening. Yes, this is not nasty at all.
Okay.
If you really think I'm biased and you really think that I'm carrying water for the Steinbrenners, you shouldn't listen. Don't waste your time because you're listening to something that you think is flawed and that I'm not telling you the truth. You would then be someone who has to be examined. Why would you listen to state radio? That's exactly what you think you're listening to. No one. There's not one broadcaster who broadcasts a team that is as honest as I am about said team. I said that the weekend in Boston is embarrassing. I've told you all their flaws. I believe a $205 million payroll is plenty enough to win. Last year was $240, and they still fell short. They didn't even get to the championship series. So, again, if you really believe that I'm biased and I'm not telling you the truth, then really you shouldn't listen because I am telling you the truth. But you know what the problem is? It's not the truth that you want. It's like what's happening in politics right now. We only watch the networks that tell us what we want to hear. Well, I'm telling you the truth. It might not be what you want to hear, and if that's the case, don't listen. Get your information somewhere else.
But to defend the fan, they want to blame somebody, and all they seem to be told is, well, you can't blame anybody.
Well, I've told them that the roster composition is to blame
this year. Well, then that means Brian Cashman then is at fault. You know, so but how many years, Michael, did we defend Brian Cashman? You know, and fans want Boone fired. Well, you can't fire Boone. That would be unfair because it's an analytic-driven team, and it would be hypocrisy to let him go when other guys are making the decisions. And, all right, well, let's blame Hal because he's not spending the money that George would have spent. Well, you can't blame him because the payroll's still very high. You know, fans are upset where the Yankees are, rightly or wrongly. They feel like the team's unwatchable. They're disgusted by their team. And it seems like they get pushback anytime they want to go in a direction of something that needs to be changed. And very seldom do we have a team that's struggling and we can't pinpoint who to criticize, right? The Jets were god-awful last year. Gase was the guy. Gase had to go. We killed Gase, you know. Ranger fans all pointed at, you know, David Quinn, and he got fired, you know, by the Rangers. We just had Gerard Gallant on in Vegas. He went to a Stanley Cup final, got bounced in the first round. Third year, they lose four games in a row for a team that would have made the playoffs. He lost his job. You know, teams make changes, Michael. Teams fire coaches. They fire general managers. They move in different directions. This Yankee fan has been told for basically a decade where the Yankees were great. Don't worry about it. We're going to figure it out. And now it's come to a head where now they're three games over 500. Can't beat the Red Sox, can't beat the Rays in a big spot, can't seem to gain any traction at all. They seem to be getting worse instead of better. And now that fan base is told, I'm sorry, you can't, no, nothing's going to happen. Nobody's going to lose their job. Nobody's going to be held accountable. That's tough to tell a fan base that is expecting somebody's head to roll. I can understand that if I'm a fan.
Yeah, but I understand that too. I don't know if heads are going to roll. I'm not privy to that information, and I can't tell you whether or not it's going to happen. But I can tell you that your fixation on the salary is just a non-starter. I don't blame. Forget that I like Hal Steinbrenner. I don't blame him. If I were Hal Steinbrenner, I'd go to Brian Cashman. This is enough, man. I gave you $240 last year. It didn't work. Now we're at $205 after we lost a lot of money last year. I mean, why do they think that a $300 million payroll would would bring something different, Don.
No, listen, I agree with you there. I mean, there's more than enough money for them to be able to be competitive, okay? No question. And they are competitive, but I don't know if throwing good money after bad is necessarily going to help the situation at all right? That's number one. Number two, I get the argument about Aaron Boone because he's limited. This seems to be a problem of how the team was created. So is it okay for Yankee fans to want to see a change? Is it time that if this team does not make the playoffs, that they have to have a serious discussion about Brian Cashman?
I believe that everything's on the table if they don't make the playoffs. Everything.
And the problem with it being Brian Cashman's fault, if you want to go in that direction, and I kind of lean towards that because everything seems to point to, well, he's got enough money and it's not working, and everybody is here because of him, right? He didn't inherit any problems. This is his team. It's been his team for 20 years, right? So you don't make that change on June 28th. You're not going to get your season saved by firing the general manager. That's going to be something for the offseason. And you know what? If they fire Brian Cashman, Michael, that means you're bringing somebody in that's going to change everything. Because otherwise, why would you let Brian go unless you're going to bring in somebody with a different vision, different ideas, right? So is a Yankee fan ready for a rebuild? Is a Yankee fan ready to bring it all down? Because that's what would happen if you fired Brian Cashman. Because if you're going to bring in somebody that's just going to be like Brian, then why'd you make the move? You're going to bring in somebody that wants to build the team in his own image. That means you might have to rebuild. You might have to make some very difficult decisions and not be a good team for a couple of years. Are you ready to do that?
It's also interesting when people talk about salary, right? You know, the Red Sox traded Mookie Betts for one reason. Salary. They wanted to get under the threshold. Salary. That's why they traded him. And the Red Sox are in first place in the American League East. Why? Because they became a better team. They traded arguably one of the top two players in all of baseball, and they got back Alex Verdugo, who, you know, is pretty damn good. We haven't even seen Jeter Downs yet. So they cleared that salary. That's the way good organizations work. They reset the salary threshold. And then all the people that I'm arguing with on Twitter, well, what does that mean? Just to save the tax money? No, it's not to save the tax money. It's for your draft capital. It's for international signings and stuff like, well, they don't draft well, and but you're going to give up on that then. Again, fans are fans. I get it. I'm not going to knock you people. But, again, if you think that I'm giving you a biased take on it, I can't help you out. My advice to you would be to find somebody else who's going to tell you the truth that you want, your truth, because I'm just telling you the truth.
You're in an impossible spot, Michael. And you can obviously talk for yourself and you can defend yourself. But how are you supposed to pin? First of all, we can't even really pinpoint exactly what the problem is because you got fans who think it's the manager, fans who think it's the general manager, fans that think it's Steinbrenner. So nobody can really pinpoint exactly what's wrong. But are you going to go on the air and say, I think Brian Cashman should be fired if you really don't believe it? What, just to appease the fans?
No. And I don't know how much closer I can come to blaming Brian, somebody who I like and I consider him a friend. This roster is not a good roster. Right. It's his fault. He put the roster together.
Now,
it's all right-handed. It's easy to pitch to if you have good right-handers coming out of the bullpen. And he handed the Red Sox a weapon of mass destruction against his team. He gave them Adam Ottavino for free. And Adam Ottavino, when he's right, and it seems like he's back to being right, you can't hit him if you're right-handed. And the Yankees have no left-handed answers.
So, all right, now there's two different things at play here. Okay, he's to blame. But is it a fireable offense? And also, even if you come on the air, Michael, and say he needs to go, doesn't mean that he'll go. It's not up to us. It's up to the Yankees, and he's part of the fabric of the organization. And I will ask any Yankee fan, and I think Brian is a major blame, and I would not have a problem if they wanted to make a change. Nobody keeps a job for life. But do you really think a general manager is going to come in here, Michael, and just keep everything status quo? He's going to make major changes, and that might mean rebuilding. That might mean not making the playoffs for 2-3 years until that general manager brings in the guys that he wants. How do you reconstruct a minor league system, right? How do you bring the payroll manageable? How do you trade Stanton? How do you do that?
The interesting thing, too, like Will Finn on Twitter said, oh, okay, about the payroll, all fine and good. All I can say is they better not raise ticket price next year. Well, Will, if they do, hey, then don't buy them. That's the answer. Then right, don't buy them.
And but
that's how you stop getting payroll ticket prices raised.
Here's what I will say then to every Yankee fan who thinks it's a payroll problem. Then what you're doing is admitting they've bought championships in the past. Because it has to be the same thing, right, Michael? If you think it's about the money you spend, then you believe the only way to win is to spend money. So it wasn't the core four. Then you won all those championships because you went out and got salary dumps from small market teams and that you signed big-name free agents. And we know that's not the fact because you can't ignore the core four, Michael, but that fan that's screaming that the $240 million payroll or the $205 million payroll has got to be $250 or $300, then isn't that de facto admitting that you won those championships because you had the most money and you spent the most money that had nothing to do with brains and skill?
Well, the narrative certainly does change, Donald. You're right, because the Yankee fans used to be really upset if you said that they bought titles. But now you want to buy a title. You want to buy your way out of this mess. And I don't think Hal Steinbrenner should do it. If I was telling Hal, I'd say absolutely not. I would not allow another dime into this. If this is the team they put together for 205, what's to say they'd spend it better at 250? Last year.
But here's the thing, Michael. How does anybody, whether it's Brian or the next general manager, fix this? Because you know how you get rid of Stanton's contract? You convince him to waive his no-trade clause, all right? And then you probably send really good prospects to some place to compensate for the amount of money that some small market team or some other team with space is going to have to commit to, which means now you're siphoning what you have to get rid of the contract. That means you're going to have to rebuild, and you're going to have to go 2-3 years of not making the playoffs in order to get rid of Stanton and to get rid of some of the contract. That means having to trade Judge, your most popular player. You're going to have to trade him because you're not going to give him the money when he becomes a free agent at the age of 31 years old. Are you ready to do that? Because the new general, the Hein Bloom of the world, Michael, is going to come in here and he's going to strip it down. That means you're going to be what the Cubs were and what the Astros were. Now, that worked out because those teams parlayed them into being real great teams and winning a championship. But what do you think a new general manager is going to do? And if he doesn't do it, then you might as well just keep Ryan.
The Michael Kay Show on 98.7 ESPN, brought to you by Geico. The real value in car insurance isn't how much you save. It's also the kind of service you get. Good thing Geico's been perfecting both for over 75 years. I believe that you have in your sweaty little paws.
Yes.
You have the Mets starting lineup.
Wow, here we go.
And tonight's New York Mets starting lineup brought to you by Tullamore Dew Irish Whiskey.
Leading off and playing second base, Jeff McNeil. Batting second, playing shortstop, Francisco Lindor.
Ah, Fernando Lindor.
Batting third, playing left field, Dominic Smith.
Ah, Dom.
Batting cleanup, playing first base, Pete Alonso.
Ah, Pistol Pete.
Playing right field and batting fifth, Billy McKinney.
Who?
Oh, if you don't know him, I don't know what to tell you. Batting sixth, playing center field, another stellar defensive play. One of my favorite Mets, Michael, Kevin Pillar. Playing third base, batting seventh, Luis Guillorme.
Oh.
Catching and batting eighth, Patrick Mazika.
Yeah! Oh, yeah.
And pitching, one of the most popular Mets. Peter knows him well. Jared Eichhoff.
He's a nice man.
Oh, I'm a huge fan.
Well, that's tonight's Mets starting lineup brought to you by Tullamore Dew. When it's game time, it's Tully time. Be sure to grab a Tullamore Dew Irish whiskey during tonight's action. Glasses up to enjoying Tullamore Dew responsibly. We have a Hall of Famer coming on next. I don't know if you guys realize that. Thomas Glavine.
That's right.
We'll ask him about sticky stuff and things like that. It's the Kay Show right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael Kay Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoons starting at 2 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.